It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. Yes, it is that time. Once again, we're going to stop the closet dwelling. We're going to step out. We're going to step up, and we're going to step into living our powerful truth once again on the Coming Out Lounge. So let's talk about this closet thing. Let's talk about it in a slightly different way today, I guess. I'm sure many of you have thought about what I'm about to say in different ways, but maybe you haven't completely processed it. And it's about coming out and how you're going to go play in the world of work and in your career once you come out of those closet doors. And that's okay if you haven't really given this a lot of thought. I mean, there's lots of other things to be thinking about right now. You know, take your time. I want you to kind of address each thing as it comes up. But since I brought the subject up, I'd like to chat about this coming out in careers and really staying balanced in your work-life balance and home life once you come out of the closet. And to help me sort through this today, I'm bringing on a really cool guy. Yes, he happens to be gay, so he's got firsthand experience himself in how to do this. But he's got a lot of stuff going on. Everything from he's a volunteer firefighter and EMT, to raising, yes, get ready for it, donkeys, chickens, guinea fowl, pot-bellied pigs on his farm that he has with his husband. They've got like a 197-acre farm. And he's also a coach. He's found just all sorts of really cool things to do in his life. And he keeps things in balance and helps others keep things in balance. And in fact, he balances all so well that he really only works about 8 months out of the year, which makes me jealous in and of itself. But then on top of all of that, he's also a very avid meditator. In fact, he's done some silent meditation retreats. He participates in Tough Mudder and Warrior Dash obstacle course races as a competitor. So really, you don't want to mess around with this peaceful warrior, but I want you to really listen to some of the things that my guest Scott Graham has to say today. Welcome to the podcast, Scott.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, man. And, you know, when you and I started talking about having you on the podcast, we really started talking about work-life balance and everything, which I know a lot of people coming out of the closet probably go, okay, well, yeah, I know I've got to work that into it. But I think a lot of us don't realize how much of a strain coming out of the closet is going to put on us, whether we're in school, in our academics, or whether we're in the workplace. I don't think we realize how much this whole coming out journey is going to put a little bit of a strain in that areas of life when everything else seems to be so much more important, whether it's coming out to friends or family and, you know, finding yourself as a gay person. So I'm just curious, you know, for you, Scott, is what I'm saying like really resonating for you in your own coming out journey? Was there like a lot of balancing you had to start to learn as you went through those closet doors?
It was really challenging for me when I came out, but this was when I came out, I was in college. I had graduated from high school early, and so I wasn't working, but my life was completely out of balance. I hate to admit this now, but I was like this avid, racist, bigoted, redneck Republican. Pick that stereotype, and that was me. That was me.
Wow.
I drove a pickup truck. I harassed gay people left, right, and center. I drank an awful lot. I mean, go to that stereotype to the extreme, and that was me. And so when I came out, it was a huge 180-degree turn. Besides, you know, having to turn to my redneck racist friends and share that with them and getting no support, I had to go out and ultimately, I didn't do this right away, but one of the things I had to do was to go and I found all these people that I harassed and apologized to them directly. It was a moving experience. This was in the mid-80s, and it was or early 80s, I should say. Yeah, right. This was like 1981, and they were so compassionate. They were like, yeah, we knew. Yeah, we understand. Yeah, don't worry about it. It was really great to be kind of welcomed from folks who I had just been really a jerk to. And that's putting it mildly.
Well, but I think this is one of those pieces that we often hear about in the stereotypes of, you know, a lot of times people will be adamantly homophobic and things such as that. And I'm not saying this is the truth for everybody, but it often is they're shielding and hiding their own true sexual orientation from society. So I think you have really shown the listeners in a very short time already how true some of these stereotypes can be. But what you've also shown is sometimes you're not going to get the reaction that you most anticipate. You know, you could have, you know, gotten completely different reactions from people, but once you really just come from a heart-centered space of this is who I am, oftentimes most people will just say, okay, we get it. We get who you are. And I realize a lot of these people were people you had harassed. But the teaching moment here, I guess, early on in this podcast would be, you know, don't be afraid to share yourself, even though it is really scary. I mean, that has to be really scary for you to like go, okay, I'm going to come say these things that, man, any one of those people could have turned on you in a heartbeat and, like, pretty much just rip you to shreds, I would assume.
Right, right, right. And the ripple effect of balance around that started going into other areas of my life. I started questioning, all right, if I'm not attracted to women, I mean, I knew I wasn't attracted to women, but if I accepted the fact that that premise wasn't true, what else wasn't true in my life? You know, the ladder that I was climbing professionally, which was computer engineering at that time, and wasn't really what I wanted to do either. And as I started to question all these pieces about my sexuality, then I started questioning my career choices, my future. And I was really lucky to have gone through that because now I work with so many people that don't do that when they're in college. And they question their career and business choices when they reach some sort of pivotal point in their 40s where they're like, my life is halfway over. Oh, my God, what do I do? I had that experience when I was in college. I mean, that was good. You know, the bad side was that I spent 8 years in undergraduate school because I kept switching majors and my parents were like fit to be tied. In fact, I was so long in undergraduate school that when I finished, I had so many credits that the college gave me 2 bachelor's degrees.
That's amazing. But I love this story, Scott, because what it brings forward is how there's all sorts of ways we all hide. There's so many different ways we hide these beautiful truths of who we are. And, you know, this is where I'm going to take it kind of out of the gay and lesbian context to a little bit of a degree. But what you just shared is this was how you were like hiding and not wanting to face so much of your truth. And all of us do this. I would invite the listeners who may be in the space of struggling with, okay, I mean, let's just be honest. If you're here listening to this podcast right now, and you're not sure about who you are, bravo to you because you're starting to find yourself. So I want to give kudos to that, number one. But number two, this could be a very hidden part of your life right now. And that's okay. That's as it should be because, you know, I want each person to come to this in their own way. But what I want you to pay particular attention to is Scott's story. You know, you've heard my story numerous times. These are stories of you're going to find yourself hiding behind something until you're ready to quit hiding behind it and to really step forward. So, Scott, what was the pivotal moment for you where suddenly you went from being this redneck homophobic guy to like, okay, this is who I really am? Was there like a specific thing that happened or what was it?
I met some guy. It wasn't some guy at that point, but I mean, we connected and we had sex and we kind of were dating and we were trying to keep it really quiet, right? Because like if you're a racist, bigoted, redneck, homophobe, last thing you want to have happen. And I remember making some obnoxious comment and there were like, I don't know, it was like a group of 5 or 6 gay men that were walking around the college campus. And they turned out and yelled out at the top of their lungs, "Say whatever you want to say. We know you're sleeping with."
Wow. Okay, well, nothing like just being called out on the carpet and outed like in a heartbeat there. That's amazing.
And actually, I was really glad that they did that because it was one of these pivotal pieces where, and I was with a bunch of other friends, right? So I changed 3 shades of red in embarrassment. And I'm like, oh my God, Everybody knows.
But I want to kind of step back a little bit because you said, you know, here you were having this hidden life going on. You were dating this guy, but you weren't talking about it. And yeah, I can tell you were afraid of something. What was the thing that you were most afraid of coming out? I mean, yes, I realize you were this bigoted, you know, redneck guy, but what was the biggest fear you had?
Oh, that I was going to go to hell, that I was going to have no friends. I had all these horrible stereotypes about what it meant to be gay. I had gone through 12 years of parochial education. And when I mean, this is how screwed up this is, really, in retrospect, but when I decided I needed to get some sort of counseling of what I needed to do about my sexuality, I went to see a priest. And like a really good kind of screwed up Catholic, I didn't just make an appointment to go see the priest to talk about this. I went to see the priest in confession.
As all good Catholics would. And I don't want anybody to be offended by that last comment I just made. I love my Catholic brothers and sisters. But yeah, it's so fitting how you did this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was really wrapped up when you think about that in this world perspective, and it was the thing that I was most afraid of. Once that crumbled, then I started questioning everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think most of us do. I mean, I know in my own world, and then again, as I've worked with people, when there is the faith-based religious piece that shows up, the fear, the first fear is based, for most of us, is I'm going to go to hell.
Absolutely.
And then you kind of have to come through the doorway of, and then I'm going to be rejected by this family. I'm not talking, yes, your own personal family. Yes, that's part of it. But there's this bigger church family that suddenly, for most of us, if we've been raised in some form of faith-based, you know, religion, and that's been a key component of our life, we're going to potentially get rejected by this bigger, you know, family. And that's really, truly scary because it's a part of who we are. It's a part of what we know. It's a part of, you know, how we identify. In fact, I remember when you and I were talking prior to recording, you had mentioned something about, you know, this piece of our identities are so tied to our jobs. Well, our identities also in the coming out process are so tied to our religious familial group as well. And it's really hard to navigate. So now you're outed on campus. And what starts to happen then? Did you like immediately go, okay, well, now I'm just a big fat fag and let's move on with it? Or was there still just tons of struggle that started to happen?
I started switching my major. I changed my major and then I changed my major again and I changed my major again. And I took all of this, the kind of rebellious part of me that was harassing the poor gay men that were walking around campus. I took all of that and I put it all into another direction. I ended up getting appointed as the student minority affairs advocate. So I was like, well, if I'm out, I might as well be out to freaking everybody. And so I ended up doing that. We ended up getting involved in protests at that time around apartheid.
Right.
Built an illegal shanty town on campus. And this was big for a liberal college that really didn't have a lot of student involvement, really struggled to get students involved.
Right.
And we got things really shifted and around the apartheid and the investments in South Africa and things like that. So I put all of that kind of energy of rebelliousness, for lack of a word, better word, went into kind of making things right for everyone, because I realized that the homophobia that I was feeling and experiencing was a bigger piece of racism and sexism and economic entitlement. I mean, it was just, I really made a big shift around my life politically and academically.
And this piece you just brought up is something that I'm not sure most people anticipate may happen for them when they come out of the closet, that you will probably find other shifts begin to happen. And I have talked about this in past episodes, but I don't know that I've talked about it in the way I'd like to talk about it now, about how even in your career or your academic pathway or whatever it may be, once that freedom shows up, Because coming out is a freedom. I think most of us would agree. Those who've been through this, those who are contemplating it, it's about being free to be who you are, number one, and to be completely at peace with who you are. But then there's something that happens, and each person does it differently. There's something that happens that freedom then spawns other areas of life. So I find this really powerful that you took those steps to start to change things and start to be who you are. How similar are you now to where you were at that time in college? Has this just been something that's continued throughout life and now you just continue to embrace new and different ways of being in the world because you're coming out? Or are you pretty much the same guy you were once this all happened in college?
I think one of the truths of our existence is that we're always evolving. And so the person that you are today, Rick, is going to be much different than the person you are 5 years from now because we have all these experiences. And I think we all have core values that drive us. Yeah. And so my value to that rebelliousness challenge piece comes out now as I do these obstacle mud races, you know, running through electrical wires and silly stuff like that kind of taps into that part of me that wants to be challenged. And I serve the community and help the community now as a firefighter and EMT. So those values are there. I think the piece that most people I see as a career and business coach, the thing that I see most people struggle with when they come to me is that they have built their lives almost backwards. They've been putting together these things like a recipe. Like if I do this and I have this house and I have this and I do this and I buy this thing and I do this job and I take this vacation, then everything will work out. And after the equal sign, it's magical happiness. And what they realize is that that's the wrong way to develop their life because they've developed it piecemeal. And so once they make a connection of what they value and what's important, which is one of the things that brings a lot of people to career coaching, they're just not happy. Then they start looking at other aspects of their lives and saying, oh, well, if this is what I really value, what about these other things? It's the exact same thing that coming out does for many gay people. It creates that opportunity, like it did for me, to look at other aspects of their life. And the sky's the limit. Once you start working from values to components instead of components to maybe I'll get somewhere, piecemeal, the sky's the limit.
Absolutely. So, Scott, this piece you just brought up about truly dialing in and working from values versus components, I loved what you said there because it's the key. And I'm not sure most people in the throes of coming out realize that what we talk about when we talk about components, it's not who you're telling, when you're telling, how you're telling, all that. It's you come from the value that you hold true of yourself and why this is important for you to be out of the closet and what values this aligns with within yourself. It's going to be so much easier for the components to fall in place. But the moment that you do not honor yourself and your values as to why you're coming out and why this is important to you, you're going to continue to have a struggle. At least that's my perspective. And I don't know if that's yours, Scott, but I'd love to have
you. I totally agree with that.
Okay.
I totally agree with that. That the struggle comes when we don't honor our values and don't follow through with those values consistently, consistently. And I know I said this already, you don't know what it's going to open up. We're all planting these little seeds of things that are important in our life. And then you reach this pivot point and suddenly those seeds blossom. I'll give you an example really quick of, and this is not a gay example, but I think it illustrates this really well. And this just happened to my client this past week. She came to me and she really wanted an accountability coach. She had some specific things she wanted to get done, but at the same point, she was really unhappy about her career. So for the past 2 months of working with her, it's all been, have you done this? Have you done that? Have you done this? Have you done that? And then about, I don't know, it was two sessions ago, we had this incredible pivotal conversation about where does she really want to go in her life and her career. She's 52. She's thinking, do I go back to school? I'm not really happy. I've worked at this job forever. Or do I just suck it up and retire? And we talked about those two options of, you know, what do you do? Do you stay at this job and then get through the next 8 years and try to find happiness? Or do you go back to school, create a bunch of debt? You won't have the same amount of money. money when you're 60 years old that you're expecting it now. And that limits your choices. And once she hammered that out, she was like, you know what? I need to make choices that are, for me, creating freedom, where I'm not feeling like I'm a prisoner, where I'm not feeling trapped. So that was the end of that conversation. Last week, out of the blue, she started throwing away all of her stuff because a few years ago, she had done some work with a coach and tapped into this idea of minimalism. And that was the small seed she planted. But because of our conversation, that blossomed. And she has cleaned out probably 30 boxes from her apartment that she's in, so much so that her friends are like freaking out. And she came up to me and she called me. She's like, there, I don't know what to say. It's like she needed to come out to her friends about her minimalism. And they were all afraid that she was going to like shave her head and join some ashram out west someplace and go off the deep end, right? Because here's right. their friend who suddenly started throwing away 40 boxes of stuff,
right.
books, CDs, all kinds of stuff. She's like, no, she says, these are all things that are keeping me prisoner. And when she said that, she said, I don't know where this came from. And we went back and I said, it's because you had this big insight about your values and you spent your whole life building things piecemeal to get to some final location that you're not clear of. And now you have these values that you're crystal clear on that are now kind of light posts or lighthouses in your life. And that's getting these other things in order. So it's not a surprise that you're throwing all this stuff away, even though that's not what you came to coaching for.
But I think this is a very beautiful example of when you start to open doorways, and I'm going to use the metaphor closets, closet doors, and open up to your truest self, the self you've always been, whether it's because you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or you're in a job that you don't want to be in. When you open those closet doors, so many other things begin to open up as well. You start to find your truest self in those ways. And this is where, as you and I both do, Scott, as coaches, encourage our clients to embrace these places and go explore. So what is this really doing for you? How is this serving you? How is this supporting you? Because it is the piece that starts to make all the movement and the action start to happen.
Exactly.
And it's really beautiful.
Exactly. And you know, it's really exciting. Gay people are really blessed with this opportunity to come out. I know that sounds really strange, but most people go through their entire lives and don't question jack nothing until they reach some pivotal point late in their age when they retire or when their spouse dies, and then they look back at their life with remorse or regret. Of, I wish I shoulda, coulda, woulda. And when gay men come out of the closet, or lesbians, or bisexuals, once you come out of the closet and question yourself at that kind of root level, that leaves the window open for you to look at everything.
Yes.
It's really an opportunity.
Everything is an opportunity. And I do appreciate that you said we are blessed in this way. And this isn't to say that other people aren't blessed in this way. I think this is one of those pivotal moments when, as a humanity, you find the thing that is your closet door and suddenly you realize what a blessing it is. And I have some good friends who are currently going through cancer scares and hopefully surviving. At least two of them I know are currently surviving. But I had interesting conversations with two out of the three so far. And they said, you know, one of them happens to be a lesbian. So she says, I never realized how much my coming out process would serve me until I've gone through this new closet door of cancer. And then the other one who's not gay has said to me, I now really appreciate the closet door experience because I'm coming out as a cancer fighter right now. And she goes, it's a scary experience, but it's also a very beautiful experience that you get to see yourself in a whole new way of just being who you're meant to be in this moment. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but I think whether you're going through divorce or you're leaving a job or, you know, all the different things that you could be your own closet doorways, embrace them. Embrace the moments because it's the pieces that will help you grow. It will help you see yourself in another light and it will help you see others in a much more forgiving way, I guess would probably be the words. So here you've gone from this redneck homophobic guy to this just arms wide open experienced life sort of guy. So in your own journey, how did you start to cross the path of, and I know you're a coach now and work for yourself, but I know getting up to that point, there must have been some job challenges and career challenges where being a gay man had to have come up. Can you take us into some of those arenas for a little bit here, Scott?
Oh, yeah. I think that is one of the pieces that has, over time, brought me to end up working for myself. I spent actually a lot of time in the 1990s after working for Outward Bound for many years, which was a great way in many ways to be in a career and not have to disclose about your sexuality because it just didn't come up while you're out canoeing or rock climbing or snowshoeing or any of those things because you're so focused on outdoor activities, you know, cooking food. That's really the topic of those experiences and your personal life never really crosses. Not even, you know, what kind of pizza you like, let alone right. your sexuality. Are you married? And the people that you worked with in those settings were also, for lack of a better words, transient. You'd work with them for a couple of months and then they'd be on to, you know, traveling out west or traveling to Florida to do other types of experiences. It was the type of environment that wasn't, it was consistently inconsistent.
Yeah.
And so my sexuality never entered the scheme of things during that period. And then I went and started working for the Department of Corrections and then building relationships with folks up in Vermont. And it was incredible. I mean, Vermont's like a magical place. We're like ahead of the world in so many ways. And people just don't care in Vermont about your sexuality and things like that. I was really blessed yeah. to have people be like, when I was out to them, be like, what? And by that point, I was in a relationship. I've been now in a relationship for, 27 years. Wow. So that was a big piece. And my spouse was born and raised in Vermont and New Hampshire. So extended family, community, things like that. And it's also a very small town where everybody knows everybody's everything.
Sure.
And everybody's also very helpful. So, I mean, not in a nosy kind of way. People are just there.
Yeah.
So it's the environment where people are just very accepting about things.
Mm-hmm. But I think part two of what's supported you, you know, not only environmentally, but what's supported you in being able to be so comfortable in who you are is your own way of being in the world. And I know not only are you athletic and love doing your mud competitions and everything, I love those, but you also are very much a pretty big meditator, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I typically am holed up in some way in silent meditation for about 20 days a year. And that really, truly keeps my head screwed on straight. I mean, you can really notice it when I'm not doing some sort of regular practice or going on these 10-day silent retreats. Mm-hmm. You can really see people around me are like, don't you need to go on a retreat, Scott? When's the last time we went on a retreat? And I'm like, what are you saying?
Yeah,
well,
you're saying
kind of like, then it comes out. I'm like, oh, good feedback.
So for a lot of people listening, you know, going on a 10-day silent retreat would be like as scary as coming out of the closet, probably. But
yes.
You don't start there. I mean, obviously, that's not where most people start. It's like, okay, I'm going on this 10-day silent meditative retreat. You basically kind of tiptoe into this would be I'm a meditator. I meditate morning and evening. But kind of talk us into, you know, how did that practice start for you, Scott?
It's interesting because the typical thing that happens when people connect to this type of meditation called Vipassana, people see someone else or know someone and that person's going on a 10-day retreat and they go and then they come back and people say, well, where did you go? What did you do? Why in God's name would you do that? That's crazy, especially in this connected age, right? People are like, oh my God, 10 days silence? Are you serious? So I had that experience. There was a colleague of mine with the Department of Corrections in 1996 that was going on these retreats. And he's like, give it a try. I'm like, there's no way I'm doing 10 days. No way. And they only offer 10-day retreats. So it's not like an option, like I only want to come for a day. And so eventually I'm like, all right, I'll try it. but I'm not guaranteeing I'm staying. These people are freaks, or I have difficult time. I'm leaving. He was like, yeah, go. But the people on the retreats are very, very supportive. You can ask lots of questions. It's very much technique-based. So you're not just sitting around for an hour or two or three or four or five, just willy-nilly quiet. You know, you have a very specific technique of practice that you're working on, and the instructions come incrementally. So you start off on day one, and day two, it gets easy. You get more information. On day three, you get more information. So interestingly enough, that same thing is going on. I would say 80% of the clients who come to work with me as a coach, and I don't proselytize this. I'm not telling people, you need to go on a retreat, you need to do this, but 80% of the clients that I work with end up going on a retreat. Because they're like, where have you been? Why haven't we had this coaching session? Where are you at? What's going on? Like, I'm going on a 10-day retreat. I won't be able to call you. Don't expect any support from me in between sessions. I have a coach who's filling in for me. They're like, why? I tell them, and the next thing you know, they're like, tell me more. And they go.
Sure. And I think a lot of this can be helpful to those that are listening is it's part of finding your route to your own peace. And I know, like Scott, I would never tell my clients, oh, you have to start meditating. I would invite them to experience it and explore it. If they're really struggling, I would suggest, you know, give it some tries. I give them some pretty easy ways to start to go explore it with some apps and stuff that are out there and available. I really encourage listeners, if you're struggling, to think about some of these things that Scott's brought up and that I brought up. And, you know, everything from Scott's being a volunteer firefighter to an EMT and his farm and then doing his Tough Mudder and Warrior Dash obstacle courses, each of these things is what helps serve the person you truly are and align with your own value system. And I think often in the coming out moments, which we never stop coming out. I mean, you guys have heard me say that numerous times on the podcast, but to realize all of this is part of the fabric of your coming out story. And the sooner you can make everything part of your coming out journey and not try to slice and dice, well, I can only be this over here coming out and this over here. No, you're coming out as a human being, and it's all just part of the fabric of your life. The sooner you can embrace that peace, the sooner you will have peace. And I know that sounds a little trite, but it's very true. Don't you think, Scott?
Absolutely. It's difficult, if not impossible, to separate these pieces of our life out into silos.
Right.
This is my piece. This is my piece. It all kind of flows together into who we are as human beings.
Awesome. So this is the Coming Out Lounge. And one of the questions that I ask at the end of every podcast, and yes, we're at that time frame, is, you know, if you could give anyone that's in this process of coming out, about to come out, maybe just came out of the closet, maybe not even close to coming out yet, but if you could give them one piece of advice from your own journey of stepping into who you are as a beautiful human being, as a gay man, what would be something you'd love to leave the listeners with?
Boy, I would say the biggest piece in my journey, especially in this digital age, I see this happens a lot. I had a friend who came over the other day and we were reconnecting after a few years, and he was talking about the kind of divisiveness he's experienced in the gay community through apps like Grindr and Manhunt, where you can get laid with a click of a button and someone shows up at your house. And we talked about the real importance of building up peer groups or peer friendships around other things than getting laid. Yep. And so if you're coming out and you're trying to figure out where do you go, what do you get involved with, volunteer someplace, find a group that gets together for a potluck or a backgammon group that's all gay. They're out there. And I belong to this group called Gay Outdoors, and they're not big all over the country, but they're big in New England, Florida, and California, and some western states. It's a great organization to get together with a bunch of other gay men and just go hiking.
Yeah.
Or go biking or go swimming and connect with folks in ways other than, you know, let me just get my rocks off.
Exactly. And I hear this so often, you know, especially – I guess because I do so much work with gay men, but I've also heard it with lesbians that, oh, you know, it's just so hard to find anyone to date. Well, then you're relying too much on the digital age, because I do believe there's lots of groups. I have lots of recommendations I give people all the time. I mean, there's a gay wine club out here, and I realize, okay, West Coast, it may be a little bit different, but I guarantee you, if you go on meetup.com and put in gay and try to find out what's in your particular area. Meetup.com alone will probably surprise you with what sort of things are out there. So, well, Scott, I've really, truly enjoyed having you on the show today and having you take time. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, what's your website address? You want to shout that out real quick here?
Sure. It's trueazimuth.biz. It's www/true, T-R-U-E, A-Z-I-M-U-T-H.biz.
Cool. And that will be available on the show page as well, folks. I really appreciate you being here, Scott, and giving of yourself and encouraging those who are starting this journey and keeping in mind that you're going to cross these career paths as well as you come out of the closet. And if you've really enjoyed any of this stuff that Scott and I have shared over the last 30 minutes, give us a shout out wherever you're listening to us. You know the drill at this point. I love the reviews and ratings. We don't do that just to stroke our ego. I want to make sure everybody knows that's not what this is for. It kind of helps get the shows seen more. As more people rate and review iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud, all those things, they kind of move you up in the rankings or in the search algorithms and things such as that. And my heart center is all about, I just want more people to be able to hear this and know that this exists. So that's what it's all about. And also, you know, the drills of, you know, coming over to the Coming Out Coach page on Facebook and tweeting about us at Rick Clemens. And you can use the hashtag on Twitter of #ComingOutLounge. And as we always do, we're going to just kind of wrap it up here today and say, once again, go out there, never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your most powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and you've been listening to the Coming Out Lounge. We'll catch you all in just another week.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.